Good morning. Praise the Lord. I want to start this morning with some questions that came in, if that's okay. And we'll try to answer some of these for you. I also want to acknowledge that there's some times that people come up and want to talk, and then I forget about it. And so I'm asking for some mercy there or forgiveness. I think I'll start out with a question that I'm not sure I'm getting this question, but I'll give it a shot here. It just says, how can I tell people, in my own words here, how can I tell people about myself? And so when our focus is on building relationships and communicating, there's different ways this could have been asked, and so I'm sorry whoever asked it if I missed this. But in general, just a basic answer is, as you're building relationships, that's when you start to learn more about each other. And so it's actually refreshing to know people and to know their story and to hear where they came from and hear the things they're going through. That's a refreshing thing, and it's also refreshing to share your story. But the objective isn't necessarily to be talking about ourselves and sharing about ourselves. The objective is to build relationships and to connect with people. And as we do that, as we connect, as we truly care for people, those things are going to come out. And I may have missed that question, so I apologize. Another question is, how will I know if a person puts up a wall when I ask a question? What will the clue be? So we're looking for clues. And the heart is to connect again. And so I reach into somebody's life. How do I know if they put up a wall? Well, it will be more obvious than probably you realize. It's going to be a situation usually where the person that's wanting to slide away from a deep relationship, wants to slide away from anybody getting inside, is going to deflect what you're asking. They're going to shoot it off a different direction. They may even repeat the question back to you. All kinds of ways. And don't look at it as, well, they're not wanting to go deep and cast it aside. That's the simple way to do it. But instead, just take note that this is going to be a situation where this person is needing to open up but is not opening up. They're putting up a wall, and It's similar. Now, I know there's people here that have walls up, and I'm not trying to compare you with this, but it's very similar to the girl in front of you at the grocery store that has the dyed hair and the earrings and the nose rings and all the things going on. We can't let that bother us, for one, and we definitely can't let that create any fear in our hearts of communicating. It should be the other way around. We should see somebody in that person that is needing help, that's wanting help, wanting somebody to reach in and care. And if you knew the person's story in front of you, your heart would go out to them. And so that needs to be our heart. When people put up walls, let's not get discouraged. And I have people come to me sometimes and say that, you know, I just can never get deep with this person. They're not interested in relationships. Well, it's more of a frustrated, it's a frustrated response. And it's gonna eliminate any possibility of ever getting into them if you're that way. And so instead, just realize that, pray that God would open up doors. Another question that came in the message yesterday, you encouraged us to apologize if we share something to lift ourselves up. Is everybody on track with that challenge? Are we still committed after a 24-hour, are we still committed to doing that? Doesn't seem too as excited as it was yesterday, but it needs to happen. But here's the question, it's a good question. What if you sense pride and the desire to be seen as someone spiritual while trying to be an encouragement and ministering to someone? You don't want to be lifted up in pride, but it's there. Should you go back and apologize for having that desire to be well thought of? How far should I take this? And so I maybe shared this response to some of you. So the picture here is you're doing something for someone else, and guess who shows up? Joseph, who shows up? I'm not sure Joseph is anymore. Who shows up? Anybody know? The devil shows up. The devil shows up. And so he's the one that's tempting you to be lifted up. You're working for the Lord. You're trying to minister to somebody. And then he comes in and starts to give you thoughts of pride, thoughts of self-exaltation. And so just stop ministering and walk away from the situation. Is that how we handle temptations from the devil? It's not. We are called to rebuke the devil, to reprove, to resist the devil. And then the promise is that he'll flee from you. And so here's a good example. Here's a good example. And I wonder, there's probably a lot of people in this room that have experienced this. That's why it's a good example. You're singing. Maybe this morning, here together as a group, and you're singing, and you're singing kind of nice. I mean, you're really hitting the tenor notes. You're really hitting the bass, alto. Things are sounding pretty nice. And who shows up? The devil shows up. So what do? Just stop singing? Or we could all go to the, what's that one song that John D. Martin was playing? The long song or the slow song or whatever it was. We could just go to that. That way we can eliminate any idea of temptation. No, instead we resist the devil. These are beautiful things. We're singing unto the Lord, and we're not going to fall for that. We're ministering to God's people. We're preaching the gospel, whatever it is. And the temptation is to destroy you from within by making you feel like you're somebody. And I just encourage you to walk away from him. Push him away and keep on serving the Lord. Keep on singing. Sing a little louder. Lift up your hand like we were told, I think, last night. Get in the battle and win. We're on the Lord's side. Okay, one more question here. Benji, I'm a young man from a church that values conservative appearance. I know I could improve my reputation. Try to follow along with this. I know I could improve my reputation and social standing by dressing more conservative. In light of your message on Wednesday, what should I do? I kind of feel good about not being highly esteemed. Teach me how to think about this. So you have a situation here where, and once again, I'm just reading this like you just heard it. I don't know all the context behind it. But you have a church that has values, that has a direction they're wanting to go, and you have a young man that is going through a struggle, because if he does what the church wants him to do, people are going to think of him as a spiritual young man. And so he's going to resist that and not do what the church says so that he can stay humble and lowly. Interesting. Once again, do you feel like there may be somebody that got into this situation a bit? You got the horns and the tail, pitchfork. This guy shows up in a lot of these situations. My encouragement would be this, young people. My encouragement would be this. You have a tremendous opportunity to just be a blessing in your churches. You have a tremendous opportunity just to learn in your churches. I want to learn. I want to learn how to learn. I want to be a servant. I want to be a blessing. I don't have to get into all this stuff. And I can just simply submit to be a blessing. I have a relationship with God that I'm working on. I have all these things in front of me that I want to accomplish in our brotherhood, building relationships, hearing people, listening for clues. And if the church is asking me to do something, if my parents are asking me to do something, absolutely. There's no issue there. It's not about now all of a sudden I'm going to try to climb the ladder of success in my church. It's not that. The example came to mind. A minister shared this when he was younger. I forget who it was now. I'll just leave it. But he said this. He was a young person, single, in a conservative church, and didn't quite follow along with all the things that the church was doing. And it was probably things that were not, what I gather, were not written down. They were just some expectations that everybody knew about. and he was not doing. Well, he gets married. He gets married, and it was very shortly after his wedding that he was going out to his car on a Sunday afternoon after church service. And as he's walking out the car, one of the ministers or one of the elders of the church or whatever it was came to him and just said, I think it may be time that you roll your sleeves down and button up your shirt. Now, there's people probably in this room that already have some things working inside of them. So he took that and walked, as he's walking to the car, his new wife is waiting in the car, and he sits in his driver's seat, and he just puts his hand on the steering wheel and just sits there. Then he rolled his sleeves down, and he buttoned up his shirt. And it was probably one of the best decisions he made. I'm not going to worry about this. I'm going to be excited that I could be a blessing. I'm not going to sit here and ponder this and try to wrestle with it and go home and stew over it. I'm just going to button my shirt up and go serve God. Amen. I think that needs to be more of our heart in our young people. There's going to be a lot of things, as we're going to get into today, a lot of things that are going to be a temptation to worry. Don't let those things be it. The subject, the title this morning is Communication in Conflict. Picture with me, I got to learn a little bit about construction, a little bit, just because of work days in our churches. And what I found there is it's pretty amazing, but we go to do something as a brotherhood, put on a roof or whatever it is for someone, and I've never wore a tool belt. If I wore a tool belt, it wouldn't have any tools in it. Maybe a hammer. Maybe I wouldn't know what to do with it, really. And it's always getting in the way, and my hammer falls out. But there's brothers that have these big old tool belts. Some of them are even strapped to their shoulders. And there's like half a truckload of tools on them. And as we're working, everything that they need is right on them. And they're working as if that tool belt is part of them. For me to wear that, it would be very cumbersome. It'd be awkward. But to them, they have it on them. And if I ever need something as I'm trying to do something, they just hand it to me. And they're very well equipped. And so if you picture a man that's looking at a project, and on his persons is all the tools that he needs to accomplish this project. That's what I would like for you all to think about when you think about communication. You have something within you that God is wanting to get out in relationships, in people, in the lost, in your homes, and he's going to give you everything that you need, everything that you need. You don't have to be like me on a work day without any equipment on. You can be fully equipped, ready for every situation, ready to connect with anybody that comes into your path. That's where God wants you. And some of you feel like you're so far from that it's hard to even imagine it. You look at that idea of being a good communicator, being someone that is able to go deep with people, and you see it as somebody that's far away. It looks big to you. And I just want to give you this encouragement. There is a God, he is alive. Do we believe that? Do we believe it? The truth of the matter is, a lot of times we don't. And if you would just carry that with you. There's a God that is alive that's wanting to help me through this. That's wanting to open up my mouth. That's wanting to give me a burning desire for other people. And there's often times in my life that I sing that little song. Because it can be easy just to make sure you have it all figured out yourselves. Then you get into a tough situation and you need the power of God, and he's not there. But why is conflict so hard to navigate through? Why is it so hard to navigate through it? Why have so many people become conflict avoidant? I hear it over and over and over. I run from conflict. I want to stay as far away from conflict as I can. If I see a disagreement or trouble on the horizon, off I go. And they either look for a way of escape or they quickly shut down. But in reality, conflict is all around us. It's amazing how much conflict there is, our political scene, relationships, and to be honest, in a lot of people's church situations. There's some people that are listening to me right now that may be all they know about in church life, it seems like, is conflict. And I think of all you young people that are sitting here in the front, I think we need to get a better understanding of conflict and not be scared of it. But my heart goes out to you. It does. My heart goes out to each one of you that seems to be caught in church struggles, caught in bad relationships, caught in some kind of conflict that seems to be pressing you down. And you go to ministers' meetings and you hear messages on stress, on burnout, overexertion, all these messages to ministers, but in all reality, it's trickling down, I believe, into our young people. And now we're hearing of young people that are stressed, that are confused because of all the conflict that's around us. But I wonder, have we lost the ability to connect with each other amid our disputes? Have we lost that? Can you yourself think of a relationship that incurred major disputes? How did it end? Was there healing? Was the end better than the beginning? Or do we see relationships within the brotherhood simply dissolve and nobody even ask any questions? We learn how to avoid people. I can remember a time that I was actually in my morning quiet time, and the thought just came into my mind of a brother. And this was years back. The thought just came into my mind of a brother, and the thought was this. I don't remember the last time I've talked to him. Right away, was there something wrong? I don't remember the last time I've ever shook his hand or greeted him. And so right there, I reached into my pocket, got my phone out, and I sent him a message. Can I come over? And sure enough, there was conflict there that I didn't know about. And so rather than dealing with conflict, it's just easier to hide from it, to avoid it. And we become extremely, at figuring it out. How not to eat with this person. I don't even know how it all is done. Why is conflict so much of a difficult thing? And I think there's some reasons for it. I want to give you an example that maybe give us a clue. You all are traveling. Let's say you're traveling north on I-75. And you stop at a travel station to get some fuel. And as you're sitting there getting fuel, a large van comes bumbling into the fuel station. You can hear the music's kind of loud. It's full of children. You can see it's a large family. There's luggage stuck in every nook and cranny. There's a rack on top with a mattress strapped to it and tents and all kinds of things. And they pull up and the whole thing is just full of excitement. Full of excitement. And you're sitting here pumping gas, and this father bumbles out and gets the nozzle. And so you start to converse with him, you know, hey, what's going on? And he says this. He says, we've been saving for vacation for 2 years. And we've finally, everybody cut out of their lives certain things. We finally have saved up enough money to go on this trip. And everybody's extremely excited. And right away you're thinking, probably going to Florida. They're on the southbound lane. So you venture and you say, so where are you going on your vacation? We've always wanted to visit the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It's been a dream of ours for years. And you look in the vehicle and everybody's got huge grins and smiles. And And you realize that the last 6.5 hours they've been driving the wrong direction. What do you do? You're in a conflict. And what you're going to have to do, if you can do it, is you're going to have to disappoint this poor family. And you don't want to do it. There is an option, isn't there? Yeah, there is an option. You go about your day. But we don't want to disappoint people. We have a hard time. How do I say it? And so it's just easier. It's easier to just avoid it altogether. And while we're talking about communication, the idea of a fear within, of disappointing, a fear of making things worse, a fear of confrontation. Are these things real? I don't even know how to break the ice to this man. You fear confrontation. And I believe it's probably, just throw this in here, it's probably the number one reason, number one is what I would say, is why we have a hard time sharing the gospel. Because we can almost be guaranteed that when we open, go stand and speak, it says there, when we go stand and speak, when we go into all the world and preach the gospel, when God decides to use the foolishness of preaching in our lives to convert people, we know that we're going to come up against some opposition. We're going to come up against some conflict. We're going to come up against some confrontation that's going to be negative. And we don't want it. And so we read all the verses about being peacemakers, and we read all the verses about all these things that make us justify the fact that we don't have to share the gospel, or if we share the gospel, we only can do it by singing things that make people happy. When Jesus says clearly that they're going to hate you, they're going to hate you for what you have to say. In fact, they're probably going to kill you. But because of this conflict avoidance, not only are we unable to communicate when things arise, we get scared, but we're also unable to do the very thing that God is wanting us to do, and it's to share His Word. But rather, reprove them. We don't like reproving people. When we see somebody mentioned it about, I think last night, about using the Lord's name in vain, that takes some courage, doesn't it? It's a very big God you're talking about. It takes some courage to do it, but that's what the Bible is calling us to do it. And I would just like to have everybody here realize that conflict is not bad. It's not bad. Just please get that through. You don't have to have it all right in your feelings. It doesn't have to line up with all your emotions. But if it can be in your head that conflict is not bad, we can almost put it in a, it's interesting, to do good and communicate, forget not, Hebrews. Forget not. So let's just take it, and in this, the way that we use that verse here, it might be a little out of context when we talk about just simply communication, because that's that koinonia, big word there. But do you believe that you just forget to do it? There's things that go on, and you never even thought about talking about it. You never even thought about it. It reminds me of the story of a woman. It was a hot summer day, and a woman wanted to just run out of her vehicle real quick and grab something. And she locked her 2-year-old in the car. And when she shut the door, she realized it. She realized she locked it, and she went into a full-blown panic and started to holler and shake her arms and jump up and down, realizing she just locked her child into a car on a hot day. And as she was throwing this little bit of an anxiety attack here, she was interrupted by the child, who said, Mother, would you like me to roll the window down? But she had forgot all about that. She can actually talk to this child. And that might be a little comical, but that is often the reality. We just forget about it. And so we hear about people's conflicts. Then you say, well, what did they say when you talked to them? Oh, I've never said anything to them. You want me to? And it comes across as something that's... Now, we obviously don't want to look at conflict as we're out trying to pick fights. I didn't want to bring this up. It's interesting. I was thinking about this. Is there people that would take this, that the conflict's not bad? That we can actually learn, this is the limbs here I get walking on, we can learn to enjoy it. We can learn to enjoy conflict. Now, you hear me out before you throw me out. But the whole idea was, when I was thinking this through, I was sitting in a chair, looking out a window. It had just snowed several inches. It was a beautiful scenery. There was a bubbling creek. There was trees and birds. There was a red cardinal. This is what I'm seeing as I'm thinking about this very thing. Will people take this as Benji enjoys picking fights? And as I'm thinking this, should I mention this? This cardinal starts to attack the very window I'm looking out of. And so I said, okay, Lord, I'll share that. But this beautiful thing, this beautiful scene became very ugly because a cardinal was throwing a fit over his own self in a mirror. And for the next hour or two, this thing just pestered the windows in a massive array of flurry. That's not what I'm talking about. You realize that? Are we good there? And I'm also not talking about enjoying conflict because of the, it's a big word, the drama. Not at all. Not at all that. We don't like drama. We don't want drama. Drama is not going to help. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Verse 17, therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. All old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. A person is born again. And all things are of God, who hath reconciled us to himself by Jesus Christ, and hath given to us the ministry of reconciliation. That is why we can enjoy conflict. And when I say enjoy, that's what I'm talking about. We are equipped to be reconcilers of this world. And we love pure brotherhoods. We love holy people. We love to be that city set on a hill. We love being united, communities that love each other. And so when something happens, whether I'm directly involved or not, right away, I'm interested in it. I'm interested in this conflict because I want to see it be reconciled. And you know, over the years... Over the last 14 years, this has always been a question in my mind. Why is it that I seem to be drawn to conflict? If I'm driving down the road and I see a car crash, I'm drawn to it. I park and I run. If I'm at a grocery store or at Home Depot, actually recently, Home Depot, and there's a conflict between two customers that are about to get into a fight, I'm right there. But yet it seems like a lot of people that I come into contact with in the church, they would rather get poked in the eye than get involved in conflict. And so I would wonder, is there something wrong with me? Is there something that's going on that's not quite lining up? And then over there in Mendon this past year, there was a teaching on conflict, Roland Ulrich. And he mentioned a quote in there, or he just quoted himself, that conflict should make us curious. And so that's got my mind thinking on this. And it's been a help to me. It should make us curious because we want to be reconcilers. Is everybody understanding that? It doesn't mean that we're trying to dramatize it up. Please, don't go there. It's just simply that we want to see things resolved. We want to see peace. Because after all, conflict means there's a problem. And if there's a problem, should we want to see it resolved? I passed a truck the other day, a company truck, a box truck, probably full of tools. And it's on the door, it says, "We don't deal with problems, only with solutions." And that's a person that's pretty confident that they can try to help in the line of work they were in. But I believe that the first step of this is to realize that it's not bad. Do not fear conflict. But realize that you can become a blessing in conflict rather than running away from it. I almost think there's maybe two camps, two perceptions when we're looking at this subject. The first camp is that we train ourselves to only look at the positive. Only look at the positive. It's like a way to self-motivate you into a cheerful life or something. Only look at the positive, never look at negatives. And what happens in this camp is we ignore them. You might think that if you pour enough blessing on a problem, it will go away. But I just want to tell you, it doesn't work that way. It may work that way, 1 out of 100. But usually problems don't get smaller when they're ignored. Problems don't even get smaller when we pour a blessing on it. It doesn't usually work. It needs to be worked through. It needs to be dealt with. Then the second camp seems to be that you're always seeing problems. You become very cynical. Everything's negative. You see two brothers talking, and you're sure they're discussing something that's negative. Maybe you. And so you see these two camps. And I would like to just say that those camps aren't going to help us deal with conflict. They're not going to help us be able to be a blessing in conflict. When conflict arises, that means that it's out in the open. And we now have a beautiful opportunity to resolve it and bring peace to the situation. I believe that this group, this third camp, whatever you want to call it, they're extremely positive people. But they're also real people. They also know that there's struggles in life and there's situations that people are dealing with. They're going to need some care. It's why pastors are so busy. With confidence, I now draw nigh. Speaking of our relationship there with God. But we think about that. With confidence, I now draw nigh. I have an opportunity to be sitting, you could say, in the same room as God. Connecting with God, asking God, speaking with God. He's wanting to give us wisdom. He's wanting peace. He's wanting us to be reconcilers. We know that. And so we have confidence. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, verse 23. So this might be one of those messages that 3 days down the road, you don't remember one part of it. And so I just want to encourage you to remember two parts. One, don't fear conflict. And then we're going to get into the second one. Don't fear it. Matthew 5:23. "Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison." And then let's jump to Matthew 18, verse 15, a few pages over. 18:15. "Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone." What was the word there I used? Go and tell him. his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. But if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he shall neglect to hear him, tell it unto the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. It's kind of amazing, but in this, these two situations, I just really love this. I love it because it covers all the bases. And so if I have an issue with something that you're doing, that means that you're in the wrong in this case. So you're the one that has done something, and I have ought. What am I supposed to do? So that's Matthew 18. You've trespassed against me. Whose job is it now to say you're sorry? Who should be going? But that's not what it's saying here. Your brother trespassed against you. He was in the wrong. But it's still, it's telling you to go. It's telling you to go. So when somebody else is doing something that's transgressing, or somebody else is doing something that's offensive, it doesn't have to be sin. It could be something even smaller. But this is something that has your attention here. You're called to go. It's an amazing thing. And not only that, but if you look at Matthew chapter 5 now, and something comes into your mind that you've done toward your brother. So now we have the other side of it. First was you, Matthew 18. Now Matthew 5 is me. I realize that I've done something that has offended you. I need to go. So whoever's in the wrong, it doesn't matter. I am the one that needs to take responsibility and go. I'm not going to fear conflict, and instead I'm going to face it, and I'm going to go to it, whether it was my error or not. In fact, what I'm called to do is to not even to drop whatever I'm doing. Leave your gift at the altar and go quickly. And it's amazing to me, but it gives the impression here that the reason you need to go quickly, because the judge might come before this is resolved. And you're going to be cast into prison. How, if that were to happen right now, how many of us would be in prison? I mean, we wrestle so much against the idea of going. It's that conflict avoidant. We just don't like it. But it's the command here from the Lord. And the most beautiful thing I believe that you'll see here, let's go back to Matthew 18 quickly. I'm not sure where you're at there. But after it's saying that you should go, this brother is in error, this brother has fallen in some way, and you are called to go, and after you go and he doesn't hear you or whatever it is, and you bring two. But if you look at the last passage that Jesus says, "For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them." It's in direct correlation with this conflict. It's all in the same passage. Now, we hear that phrase a lot. You hear it a lot when you're at a prayer meeting that's barely attended. We say, "Hey, Lord, you said it." And you know what? I believe it. And I think we can keep saying that. But that's not the context the Bible's talking about here. The Bible, what Jesus is saying here, is that when you go, you have the attention of God. And I just picture, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking of when Stephen was martyred, and after he was killed there, and he looked up to God and commends his spirit to God, it says that Jesus was standing there. And we've all heard that whole analogy of why Jesus was standing. And it's nice for us to think of it this way. A saint, one of his children, was just brutally killed for him, and it has his attention. He's not sitting at the Father's hand anymore. He's now standing to receive him in. And we read about that at the end of Jude as well, that he would with joy receive you. I forgot how that's worded there. But I believe the same concept is going here. You know, the Lord is here. There's a conflict. Then all of a sudden, one of the parties gets up to go to resolve it. And God says, "I will be in that meeting. I will be there. I care about that." And I have found it to be true every single time I've done it. Every time I've done it, it is hard. And the devil is fighting against it with all that he has, trying to get you just to say, forget it, it's his fault, he can come to me. I didn't do anything anyways. And all kinds of excuses so that we would avoid this whole situation. But the commandment from Jesus himself here in Matthew 5 and 18 is that you need to go. And when you go, the power of God is there. And I have never had it happen one time, not once, where it was not a beautiful time. Not a beautiful time. Hearts that are mending. Often just something that was a miscommunication of some kind. I thought you and I felt this. And after the thing's over with, you're closer together if he hear thee. You're closer together. And you come home rejoicing. The weight has been lifted. It should bring you comfort. And the beautiful thing is that it's a double because your brother's called to do the same thing. Your brother's called to do the same thing. I look at that as so much comfort from me, myself, ever drifting, ever being deceived. I believe that if we're truly living out communication in brotherhood, communication in relationships, communication and conflict, it's going to be near impossible for you to be deceived. Because brother's going to be coming to you. It's like a foolproof way here. If I do miss it, he's called to come. It comes from both angles. And it should bring forth an extreme amount of accountability, comfort, security. I remember one time I was asked to get involved in a Bible study in the city. It was a large Bible study in a mega church. Obviously, we'll leave that. And I wanted to be involved for the idea of trying to reach out to these people. I wanted to be a missionary to this Bible study, to say it plainly. But I needed to talk to my elders first. So I had a meeting with them and told them what was going on. And very wisely, they thought it was a great idea, but they said, we'd like you to find two people to hold yourself accountable while you're doing this. So just find two brothers. And I never thought of that. I remember leaving that meeting, taking it extremely serious. What my elders, what my authorities are saying is, Benji, this is a great opportunity for you. However, it's also a great opportunity for you to be deceived. And so I took it serious and I thought about it and I thought of two brothers that came right to my head. Two brothers. I'm going to go talk to both of these brothers. But what if they don't like conflict? And so I went up to one of the brothers and I said, I have a question for you. If you were to see me and my family start to drift to the world, maybe it's real slow. You see, I start wearing kind of a nicer shirt, maybe start doing my hair a little different. What would you do? He says, brother, I would just pull out of it. I'm not going to mess with it. I don't want my family to get influenced by you. It would be devastating. So do you think I had him as one of my accountability partners? No. I believe the next brother actually started to cry. When we get the idea that conflict is something that we should run from or fear, if we don't get to a place where we can talk through our differences, I'll just say this, you could quote it. We will never be able to make decisions together. It won't happen. If we can't talk through differences, we're not going to be able to talk through our decisions, church direction. You won't be able to do it. It's going to handicap you. And what we do is we start, they call it self-selecting the group you're in. You start just selecting the people that you can kind of get along with, and the people that there's conflict with, you just push them off. The title of this series is A Sacrifice for Communication. Are we willing to do the hard things, young people? Are we willing to be the individual that says, I'm going to go? I'm not going to fear this. I'm going to go and I'm going to go as humbly as I can and try to help this situation. And when you do, follow the command of the Bible and the Holy Spirit and you go, what do you think you should do next? Anybody know? Ask questions. That's the first thing. And then listen. Ask questions and listen. The idea of usually a conflict is kind of like an iceberg. All you see is the very top of it, but there's a lot more going on underneath. And so when you enter into this conversation, this beautiful communication and conflict, your idea is to try to listen and understand what all is going on. I understand that you're struggling with something that I've done, and brother, I will do whatever it takes to make that right. Please, share your heart. And this brother starts to share his heart, and you listen, and you're trying to understand what he's saying. You're taking it seriously. You're developing a bigger picture of what's all going on in this person's life. I can remember an example, and I'm running out of time here, but I can remember an example where I'll just leave that. Another key here. So we're going to ask a question of I've noticed something. Or I felt something in my own heart. Whatever it is, we get the subject out, and then we listen. And we truly care what's going on. We want to understand. And then there's things that we should never do. We should never defend ourselves. Never do it. The temptation at this time is greater than it probably ever will be. Don't ever do it. Even if he says something that you know is not true, don't defend yourself. Hear it. Receive it. When we get into a habit of defending ourselves, we realize that people can never tell us anything. Never assume. And never manipulate. Sometimes you'll be in a conversation with somebody that's really struggling with this conflict, and they have a hard time getting it out, and we can actually turn this thing right around. We can manipulate the situation so that we leave, and this person says, he didn't hear anything I said. And he got his way. And off he goes. And then also communicate extremely clearly and openly. Clearly and openly. Don't be at a place where it's like chasing a squirrel around a tree. I don't know if any of you have ever hunted squirrel before. But you walk into a woods and you know a squirrel just ran in front of you and the squirrel just disappeared. He's gone. Well, the reason he's gone is because he's still just 20 feet from it, but he's on the other side of a tree. And as you try to walk around this tree, he's walking with you. And no matter how much you try to get this squirrel, you'll never see him. Don't be like that when we're talking about conflict. Just be extremely clear and extremely open. This is what's going on. This is the situation at hand. Brother, I heard you say this. Just be extremely open and clear. Try to ask the question to get this answer out. Listen to the whole thing, and then don't defend yourself. Don't manipulate the situation. And try to be extremely clear when you speak. When you're not afraid of conflict, I believe that God is going to use you in a far greater way. I believe that. And I believe that you'll start noticing things around you that you never noticed before. Because you're actually going to be intrigued by it. There was a time, and I'll close with this story, but there was a time that, it's another, interesting incident there, but there was a time where I was just driving down the road, deep in thought. And all of a sudden, I get something caught out of the corner of my eye, and it's a woman that's running pell-mell down a business driveway toward the street, flailing her arms as wild as she could. Wow. And so an easy thing to do is, there's lots of cars on this road, I'm just going to keep driving. But that's not even a thought, right? And so you pull into the driveway, and this woman, as loud as she can, starts running back up the driveway, hooting and hollering, and you tear off after, and she goes to the same situation. There's a car with a child locked in on a hot summer day. And so this is a conflict. There's somebody that's extremely wound up, and my temptation could be to get wound up as well. To get wound up, to feel my emotions getting excited, to lose control of the situation. But a key to conflict resolution, when you're dealing with somebody, there's a major key, and it's called control. And it's going to be that you need to control yourself. Do whatever it takes. If you have to sit there in silence for several minutes, if you have to say a prayer, don't let your emotion just roll. Next thing you know, you're in a bantering and an arguing. And I remember as this child was certainly going to die. This lady was wailing. And I just looked at the situation. And what I saw was this. There was a car that was running. There was a child locked in the car in a car seat. The air conditioner was blaring. And there was a fan clipped onto the car seat blowing in this child's face. And the child was fast asleep. I said, ma'am, this child's fine. I explained to her what all was going on, that your car's running, it's not hot in there. We'll call the police. If there's a child involved, they can usually come out and unlock it. And a conflict can be resolved extremely easily if we just relax. We're not defending ourselves. We're not trying to fight anybody. We're just trying to communicate, trying to find out the situation, and then get to a resolution. So God bless us as we try to endeavor to do that. That was a little bit rushed, but the Lord can add to it.